Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help members of the military community succeed in their civilian life and career. Today's episode number 345, Flexible Jobs That Follow Your Life with Mika Cross.
What we're finding, especially in the workplace now, here in my role at FlexJobs, is that more and more talented workers are willing to give up higher pay and benefits for more flexibility. And that's flexibility of all kinds. So primarily our workers do indicate that their preference of flexibility is remote work, meaning working from home or being able to work in a location independent kind of fashion. But many are looking for other kinds of flexibilities, whether that be part-time employment, whether that be shift work, whether that be gig economy work, where they have their ability to choose when, where, and how they work on a 1099 or contract basis.
Well, in 344 other episodes, we spend so much time talking about what sort of work people do, the industry they choose, the functional role they take on, the size of company, even the part of world in which they work. But we hardly ever devote time to how they work. Well, today's interview is all about the how. Mika is an Army veteran and acclaimed expert on how the workplace affects employee engagement. We talk about remote working and other flexibility options and why listeners may want to pursue this as a primary aspect of their next career move. I loved my conversation with Mika. She is energetic, knowledgeable, passionate, and generous. She is also extending a discount for her company, FlexJobs, to all veterans. And there's additional information in the show notes for this episode at beyonduniform.org with that offer. As always, feel free to check out the show notes with resources and links to everything we discuss, including interviews with American corporate partners and hiring our heroes that Mika talks about in this interview. You'll also find a ton of information that Mika references as well. So with that, let's dive into my conversation with Mika. Well, joining me today in Chesapeake Beach, Maryland, my guest today is Mika Cross. Mika, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be here.
And for listeners, you're missing out on a killer view of the Chesapeake. Mika's right overlooking this breathtaking view. I want to give listeners a brief sense of your background. Mika is a widely acclaimed workplace expert, speaker, strategist, and innovator specializing in interdisciplinary expertise in the areas of innovative global workplace initiatives, cultural change, strategic communications, knowledge management, next generation and future workplace predictions, performance and talent management, and employee engagement. Her 20 plus year career in public service includes assignments through the United States intelligence community and across the federal government. She is a veteran of the United States Army, having served as both an enlisted soldier and commissioned officer. And so Mika, maybe to start off, what's not in the public bio you want people to know?
Yeah, well, first of all, that's a mouthful. I'm sorry that I gave you so much to, to state around my background, but it's fun to hear all of the things that I've been able to concentrate on, first and foremost, on behalf of people, right? Because they're the ones that are getting the job done each and every day. So what's not in my bio? I happen to be from a tiny little small rural town in Maine. It's a lakeside community about 15 minutes away from Bangor, which is the largest city close by. So if you happen to be a Stephen King fan, he is our claim to fame. That's pretty much it for Bangor, Maine. So, you know, I'm one of the ones that can actually say, not even my grandparents, right, that I can say I grew up in a town where I had to walk uphill in both directions. No, but you know, a mile plus each way on a dirt road and to get to the bus stop in sub-zero weather sometimes in the winters of Maine. So I had a really wonderful, amazing childhood, I'd like to say. I was raised by a single mom myself. My mother's parents and family were residing in New York, and then here we were in little rural Maine. And so as I grew up and learned to navigate the outdoors, really, when I think back, everything that I experienced really did set me up for success in joining the military and doing that, even though that was first from my mind as I was growing up. You know, I thought I was going to be a journalist or something of that nature. But I did about a year of college at Northeastern University, and I did, in fact, major in journalism. And after about a year, I was feeling kind of lost. Like, where would I find myself? Where would I see myself? So I took a semester off, went to New York for a summer, worked a little there. And then I had this really great mentor who had been in the Women's Army Corps. And she was very strongly encouraging me to consider the Army. I could not have been further from even thinking about military service. But with her encouragement and her direction and guidance, it led me about 8 months later to decide to enlist in the Army myself. And I 100% credit where I'm at today to that journey and to that specific mentor. She herself also was a federal employee after military service. She had worked for the Department of Interior in the National Park Service and traipsed around New England working many different areas. And I'd like to give that, her name is Charlene. Charlene gets all the credit in helping to guide me at a very young age to my path and my journey in the military. So those are some of the things that I think are in my bio that are kind of fascinating because it paints the picture of my story overall.
That's wonderful. And I appreciate your including that. And last week's episode was with Admiral Mullen. And since that conversation, I've been thinking a lot about leadership and what we do to pay things forward. And that's a beautiful example of how Charlene, in her generosity and her interaction with you, she really, it sounds like, changed the course of your life and opened your eyes to these new possibilities. And I think that's great to remember the impact that we can have, the impact that you can have today, sharing your story with our audience, and for listeners, the impact they can have by giving encouragement or just taking a few moments with someone to help share advice or encouragement.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. I think we need more of that in this country, and to remind ourselves that no matter what's going on, no matter who's in what leadership position or what's going on politically or otherwise, it's we who are the community. It's we who can give back to one another, support each other, uplift each other, guide each other in the right direction. And none of us get here alone. So I'm very grateful and thankful to all of the people, because there are many, many in my career history who have guided me and given back. And I feel very obligated, and I feel a personal sense of responsibility to do the same.
I appreciate your saying that too, because I don't think it matters what side of the aisle people are on. I think there's a general sense of frustration just about our country's state of affairs. And I can get in a really reactive place where I get really down and then I don't really want to do anything. And what I love about what you're saying is like expressing some proactivity and realizing that we have an impact every single day with the people around us, the cashiers we run into, the people we talk to on the phone. Like, that's our ability to have influence and to make a difference. And I just love that attitude. I imagine that's carried you to where you are today.
Well, thank you. It's one of the things the Army taught me long ago is that you need to be a really good follower to become a very good leader. And so I learned that piece early on, and I'll never forget all of the investment that people had in me. And so I'm very happy to give that back and pay it forward and encourage others to do the same, whether that be parenting, mentoring in the community, volunteering in your church, neighborhood, giving back in any different way. You know, service can come in many different forms. It doesn't necessarily have to be uniform or public service. We all have that ability to inspire and uplift each other. So thanks.
And you know, I did have kind of a mouthful of an introduction. If you were to run into someone, let's say someone else from the Army on the streets, and they said, "Mika, what do you do for a living, or what is your career?" How do you answer that?
Well, first I just tell them to Google me. No, just kidding. Because quite frankly, I say that in jest, because I've done so many different things and it could be phrased in many different ways. But at the end of the day, and it's really abstract sometimes, but at the end of the day, what I've been able to do is turn my passion into a lifelong journey of learning and giving and creating better places for people to work. So whether that be through human resources policy, which is where I started, or operations, in the military, I was adjutant general. So, and first when I was enlisted, I was 71 LIMO, which doesn't even exist anymore. So that's administration, personnel, finance, you know, all of the things that support people as they're doing the hard work of combat or otherwise. So I'm a very proud combat support services veteran. Not all of us can say that. And sometimes a lot of women feel like, you know, if you haven't served in combat, that you weren't truly a veteran. Well, we are. So I learned very quickly that, you know, the support arm of creating an environment and a culture that embraces and supports everyone is incredibly important. And that includes even the family members, whether it be in the workplace and private industry, or whether it be in the military or the intelligence community after 9/11, you know, how do you create a workplace that inspires greatness and allows people every day to take care of the things that are most important to them outside of work so that they can bring their very best to the workplace? And I think that's a matter of national security, quite frankly, whether you're a civilian, whether you're a contractor, whether you own your own business, or whether you're serving in some capacity. If we cannot do that and bring our focused best selves to work while we're on the job and for on behalf of the mission, then, you know, we're really missing out. And for private industries, that means dollar and cents. You know, turnover is very costly. The ability to recruit and retain top talent and diverse talent who have diversity of thought to be able to solve really hard, big challenges. And then thinking about, you know, how are you going to bring the best solution sets to whatever your mission is on any given day? It costs a lot of money to find talent and keep them. And if you're not doing those things to support the whole person, you're really missing out. So that's kind of my thing.
A couple of things I'll chime in here. I love the passion you bring to this. A phrase I heard years ago that stuck with me is this lady told me, she said, "Justin, the world needs more people who are truly alive in whatever they're doing." And I love that sense of like the gift it is to our community, our family, and our world when we're really lit up and excited about whatever we're doing. And as a manager, the phrase I used to like was happy cows produce good milk. And I'm just a big believer that if, you know, I think this comes from the military as well. If you're taking care of your people, if you're looking out for them, if you're making sure that they're happy and growing and fulfilled, they're going to do their best work. Yeah. And the reason why I think it's so exciting to have you on the show is I think the workplace is going through a lot of changes. It's been going through changes. It's going to continue. And you really hit the nail on the head. For anyone in a leadership position to attract and retain talent, you have to create a workplace that people enjoy. Otherwise, they'll go somewhere else. And it seems like you're really at the forefront of reimagining what that could look like. And it's not probably like the workplace that our parents lived in, and it's changing. And could you maybe speak to any of those changes that you're seeing right now, or what a workplace even looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we're working in a world with five generations of employees all under one roof or virtual office space if you're working remotely like I am. And so what that means is you're really throwing together a lot of different philosophies and competencies with regards to technology savvy, how people collaborate, how they interact with one another, their communication styles, and all of those things. So the workplace is transforming itself by virtue of people staying longer and coming into it earlier. So I have colleagues, you know, in the federal government who are managing huge teams of student interns as young as age 18 or 19, all the way through 72, 75 case officers at one of the IA agencies, you know. And so imagine what that takes from a skill set and competency perspective as a mid-level or senior level leader to be able to inspire and manage performance and work on team camaraderie. You know, this is not your father's workplace or your mother's. And so different preferences and styles also, you know, even for organizations that don't offer different modalities of work like telework or remote or virtual or those kinds of options, having a mobile office capability, meaning a place where people can pick up their laptops and go and work together side by side in sort of a co-working kind of environment, is incredibly important. Even in a SCIF, you know, when you're talking about workers with top secret clearances or requirements for mandatory office equipment that can't be portable and taken different places. What we're finding, especially in the workplace now, here in my role at FlexJobs, is that more and more talented workers are willing to give up higher pay and benefits for more flexibility. And that's flexibility of all kinds. So primarily our workers do indicate that their preference of flexibility is remote work, meaning working from home or being able to work in a location independent kind of fashion. But many are looking for other kinds of flexibilities, whether that be part-time employment, whether that be shift work, whether that be gig economy work, where they have their ability to choose when, where, and how they work on a 1099 or contract basis. We're seeing more independent workers, as I mentioned, in the gig economy, and of course, flexibility as a means for being able to accommodate lifestyles. I mean, if we think about where I live and work, 40 minutes outside of the nation's capital, traffic on any given day for me to get in 36 miles one way could mean upwards to an hour and a half or 2 hours each way. And so for people that are getting educated and thinking that they want to go to where the jobs are in large metropolitan areas, you know, whether that be in California, whether that be in Boston, Austin, Texas, what, you know, you name it, New York City, there's a mass Texodus going on right now. People do not want to live that lifestyle any longer. It is really hard to balance everything that you want to be doing when you have to also add on 15 plus hours of commuting every single week. So people have a lot of choices right now. It's also a tight labor market, which is good news for veterans and military families, but not so great for employers who have very stringent and strict requirements. So what we're seeing more and more are employers who are expanding their breadth and depth of remote and flexible work arrangements, allowing options and really using it as a way to attract and also retain top talent from all over the country and really around the world also.
I love that. You may know the stat. I heard this stat 6 years ago. I've been misquoting it since then, but it was something to the effect of after like 20 minutes of commute, every incremental 10 minutes of commute, you needed $10,000 in salary to offset the happiness that you're giving up by sitting in traffic. And that's been my experience as well, is it can really be grinding. I'm in my home office right now. I love working from home, and not having that friction point in a day is so exceptional. I'm wondering for people who may be more familiar with the traditional office environment, could you maybe give the pros and cons as they try to figure out if they would like to work remotely or have that flexibility?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and there are a lot of great assessments, you know, for helping job seekers decide what kind of environment they'd like to work in, what kind of culture they'd like to work in. But a lot of times we overlook what kind of work schedule and flexibility that would be best suited to our personalities and our work styles. So, you know, when I'm thinking in terms of what makes a really great, flexible remote worker, it's someone who is able to manage their time, someone who is able to make sure available, accessible, and responsive, just as they were if they were in the office, someone who's able to minimize distractions. You know, telework and remote work has been around for more than 30 years now. Mm. It's taken many different forms. Sometimes you give a lot of it. You see in the news, there's companies that take it back and restrict it. Right now, the federal government is rethinking how they're designing workspaces and all of these things. But if there's one thing I know is that if you have good workplace practices, policies, and structure in place, no matter what kind of workplace you have, then you'll equip your managers and leaders to be able to manage work from anywhere and anyone really well. And that goes the same for if you're in the office. But I think in terms of being a remote or flexible worker yourself, you really do have to kind of know yourself. You know, do you work better in a more isolated environment? But it's not traditional anymore the way it used to be. So like, look at us right now. We're having a conversation from hundreds of miles away from one another. And we're looking at each other. We're seeing each other. We can read each other's body language. And, you know, that there's something meaningful there. I work in a remote office that has technology capability that we actually have avatars in conference rooms. And so we're able to pop in a conference room or have a chat. I can see who's in, who's out. That said, it's not so rigid and structured either. So again, I think take a look at the workplace reviews of those employers that you're most interested in. See what other people have to say. I love harnessing the power of our network, especially on social media right now, like places such as LinkedIn and other social media campaigns. I mean, you can see really quickly or tap into your network or the network of others and ask questions around what does it feel like to work there. I think it's really important to do your homework before you put pen to paper and actually apply. And then once you're qualified and go through the process, having a conversation around flexibility or work schedules or work arrangements is really important. Often, you know, we have people that come in the door and they are expecting a traditional work environment, perhaps with some employer, and they come in, think they're going to have an office, and they're working in a huge open bay in cubicle land. So that might not bode well for people that think and process information differently or might be overstimulated in some respect. And when we're also considering a diverse workplace that is accommodating many different things, especially hidden disabilities and medical conditions and differences in, you know, neurodiverse processing, it's something to think about. It's really important to also know what you need to bring your best work to the workplace, regardless if it's brick and mortar 9 to 5 or in our home office, just like you and I are working from right now.
I love that because we talk a lot about self-knowledge on the podcast. And that's really what comes through to me is like just really being honest. And it took me a long time to realize like I really work better focused without distractions and I get distracted really easily. And so having my own space has been immensely helpful. And, you know, most of, you know, five, seven years of my career, I was in an open office space and retrospect realizing the toll that that takes from a productivity standpoint. And there's people who are the opposite, who my office right here in isolation would drive them nuts and they need to be around that and they need to see people face to face. And so I love this sense of just taking the time to really figure out what your natural preference is and then trying to construct a work environment that's going to support that.
Yeah. I think it's incredibly important. When you're thinking about veterans and transitioning military, or really anyone affiliated with the military family too, you know, we have a unique set of circumstances. We come from a very structured environment when we're transitioning, whether or not you planned to transition out, you know, upon retirement, or there was an incident or issue in your family that required you to think about getting out early and you're navigating the civilian labor market. You know, it is a very different feel when you're walking into a building in a suit rather than in your uniform, where you know you're gonna get up and wear the same thing every day, and you know your team members have your back, and you know there's a structured set of rules that you have to guide yourself by, and we have our leadership and ethical principles that we're given in any service. It's a lot different, you know, in the civilian labor market. It's one of the reasons why when I was making my transition out of uniform, and it was a very difficult decision. You know, I had just pinned on captain, and I look at my colleagues now and they're all colonels or lieutenant colonels and, you know, 05s, 06s. And I'm thinking, oh yeah, I miss it. That could have been me. But I had to know myself. And at the time I was finishing up grad school, I had already had my top secret clearance. I had worked in the military for more than 7+ years on active duty. And then also was in ROTC as I was finishing my degree. But I had a little girl who is now 17. And I knew that at the time, the likelihood that I was going to have to leave her, and she was my firstborn, was really high. And I wanted to not have to ask my troops to do something that I really might have had a hard time with. And I would have, because I wanted to be with her. I wanted to be with her every day. So I chose the hard decision. I made that hard decision to resign my commission and look elsewhere. I had a lot of different options. You know, I was in DC, as I mentioned, I had a top secret clearance, a master's degree. I was 28 and had already almost 10 years of experience leading lots of people. And so I had a lot of options, but I decided to go into public service in the intelligence community. And for me, it felt like home a little bit more. That transition was a little bit easier for me. So I don't know what it would have looked like if I had gone private industry first. I did have an option to do that, but it felt a little safer for me to integrate into a workforce that kind of understood what service meant and also had some military that worked there. So
that's great. I mean, I love this sense of a soft landing of going to a spot where there's enough difference, but enough familiarity to make it accessible. I'm wondering, I love what you're saying about this decision process. And I'm curious, do you have any, what has helped you get clarity for yourself around either the values that drive these decisions or what your natural preference is. And, you know, I'm curious for you specifically, but also especially if there's any resources you would recommend to listeners that they might be able to look into to start figuring out what their values are or what their natural preferences are.
Yeah, well, you know, we talked a little bit about mentorship, and I am a huge fan of leaning into community-based organizations that already get it right. So I love this organization called American Corporate Partners, and they offer, if you're not familiar with them, they offer cohorts for veterans, transitioning service members, and even military spouses. And so you're able to connect with people in industry or even business owners who can help navigate through this process of thinking through all these things that you just mentioned. And, you know, also leaning on some grassroots organic kinds of community-based networks, like on LinkedIn. There are so many different veteran-based groups that I belong to. I love Hiring Our Heroes. I feel bad because I don't want to exclude all of the great other organizations that are out there. So forgive me if I don't remember them all. Maybe we can list some when we post the podcast itself too. I'm happy to do that. But there are so many resources out there for transitioning military and veterans and their families. And I really suggest leaning on them, using them, and finding out who's in your community already, maybe in the neighborhood or area that you're considering relocating back to in Hometown USA, as well as from where you're at right now to help make that transition a little bit more smoothly. The other thing that I love is the fact that employers are more heavily leaning on publicly pronouncing their military and veteran hiring programs. And a lot of those are including sort of affinity groups for transitioning military and veterans that are in the workplace. So even a just quick Google search on companies that are most military friendly. I know the Department of Labor, Veterans Employment and Training Service, where I last landed in public service before I made my transition to private industry, they have a great recognition program called the Higher Vets Medallion Program. Those are companies that are vetted and verified by the federal government, Department of Labor, as being military friendly and having the right kinds of support. Those are career advancement, affinity groups in the workplace, those kinds of things. So that's a great place to start too. And then even places like here on FlexJobs, we have a list of our top 100 most remote friendly employers. And we've identified those who are also military spouse employment partners. Typically, those who are military spouse employment partners recognized by the Department of Defense are also veteran friendly. So those are just some really great resources that I would start with in thinking through, you know, where to begin your career search, how do you match what your skills and interests are, and how do you think about what would be the most effective transition for you personally? Because what looks great for you is not the same that's going to be great for me in my lifestyle.
100% agree. And for listeners in the show notes, I'll also add links. We've done a couple interviews with American Corporate Partners and with Hiring Our Heroes, exceptional organizations. And I'll add in after our discussion too, any other resources. We talked about this just briefly before we started the recording, but could you talk about why people in the military spouses, like why they might be a good candidate for remote or flex work?
Yeah, I think it's also important if I could start with just defining what remote work is, because it doesn't have to mean 100% work from home, meaning 100% remote. So our companies and employers hire all sorts of remote and flexible jobs. They could be partially remote, meaning some in the office and some from home or a different co-working space. They could be fully remote, meaning like you or I working from our own home office, or sometimes they even subsidize a co-working space so that you do have an office. It just doesn't happen to be in a headquarters building for that particular employer. And then they also have option for remote, which means kind of based on the candidate. So if you come to the table with maybe past remote work experience or flexible work experience, you might be more likely to be able to negotiate a remote work option for you based on your level of skill and background and what you bring to the table. So there's a lot of variety there. I'd like to dwell a little first for veterans and military service members. You know, there's a lot of stigma around mental health issues for us, right? And what we may have experienced while we were in service and working through some of those things, healing from trauma, stress, whatever it might be. And so I do find that for those of us who have experienced some of that while we were in service and or in life, sometimes working remotely or partially remotely can shield us from some things that otherwise might be triggers or otherwise might require an employer to have to accommodate. It's an easy way to find a job without publicly claiming what you need as an accommodation that fits your life and your need for quiet time, or how you process information, how you interact with others, in all of those things. I really think there's something there, especially for us veterans. And then when you're thinking about portable job and portable career opportunities that can follow you anywhere, consider what that means for our military spouses who are experiencing 40% higher unemployment and underemployment rates than the civilian labor market. It is absurd. And who in this day and age can get by for a family, especially if you're in the military, on one income? Not many people can do that. So remote work really enables the ability for spouses to be able to continue meaningful and successful employment to support the family when they need that, when they need it most. It also sometimes allows the flexibility that you need to also be a primary caregiver of, let's say, children or other family members who are in need of medical help while your service member is either deployed or in training or what have you. Another thing that wasn't in my bio is that I've been a single mom of two for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And when I transitioned out of the military, I was in Washington, D.C. My family's in Maine and New York. So I did not have family close by to help me navigate caring for a 9-month-old infant, a 4-year-old daughter, all the while working in the United States intelligence community. It was a lot to juggle. Having the flexibility in work schedule and some option for remote work for my unclassified work that I was doing, I mean, I think it saved my life. It certainly did save my career, and it enabled me to be an advocate for others to create programs that really transformed the workplace. And I'd like to think saved their careers too, quite frankly. Yeah. Mm.
So much I want to chime in on. First of all, I've got a 1-year-old, 3-day-old son, 1 year and 3-day-old son. And my wife and I are constantly saying, like, it's so overwhelming. And we constantly say, like, I can't imagine doing this on our own. And so, you know, first of all, just recognizing the incredible strength it required for you to both have a job and raise 2 children is really, really incredible. And I love the beautiful portrait you gave there of all the different reasons why our audience might consider remote work, and everything from that, you know, maybe a family member who has special needs or needs that extra help, to that starting point of just, you know, being honest of like, look, if you've been through trauma and like needing just a little bit more quiet or solitude or autonomy or control, that's such a great way to take care of that need without, you know, if it makes them uncomfortable to have to advocate for that or put that out there. So I just appreciate the way that you painted this picture of all the different reasons why people might benefit from this without even realizing it.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's important for us to just remember, you know, again, I think as a military community, we're so focused on the mission, and that's awesome. It's great. It's what distinguishes us from the rest, right? But at the same time, we have to take care of us too. And having a choice in how, when, and where you work and where you go to work, and choosing what kind of environment is going to make you thrive and excited and passionate and bring your best work, but also take care of yourself and the needs of other people in your lives, I think is so incredibly powerful. And right now we have a lot of choices. So people vote with their feet. they also, you know, decide what's best for them, whether it be money at the time. Things change in one's life too. You know, my children are getting a little older. To be honest, and I have to pass this along to you since you have a 1-year-old, I thought it was going to be a lot easier. I thought I'd be working in a traditional office full time now, maybe, you know, in the C-suite. But no, instead I chose a fully remote position because it's more busy than ever. Mm-hmm. Now we're juggling college visits and sports issues and everything else under the sun. So, you know, I also am keenly aware that we have a very finite time with those that we love. And so it's important to make a meaningful life, which includes work. work is very meaningful for me. I love it. It brings me joy. I've been able to help change, like I said, the workplace, the landscape of work, and help bring joy to others. But at the end of the day, I also have, you know, a circus to take care of. So
I love that. And I definitely feel more productive. Like I love the efficiency of cutting out that commute time and having that time to work. I love being able to go upstairs and have lunch, but see my son. And there's so many benefits there. And you had mentioned, I like that you had called out earlier in our conversation about how location is one component and kind of time is another. One thing, like this Monday, our nanny fell through. So my wife and I are taking Monday off, but we're going to work on Saturday. And just having that ability to shift schedules is really incredible. One thing I was wondering, and I'm trying to predict what questions our audience might have, but I can imagine from an employee standpoint, there might be a concern of like, if I work remotely, I'm not getting FaceTime. And so will I, you know, maybe I'm not get promoted as quickly. And I imagine for employers considering this, there's this fear of like, well, if they're not in the office, how do I not know they're not just golfing all the time? And I'm sure you get questions like this a lot. Like what would you say to both the prospective employee and the employer?
Well, I definitely think there's some truth in that. You know, life is all about choices. And so for me, I mean, I could write a book about all of the amazing, amazing jobs that I've had to turn down. Maybe not that I had to turn down. I chose to turn down. And I chose to turn them down because I knew that the requirement of having to be physically present all the time in this certain way would make me do just that because I have a really tremendous work ethic. But what would that do to my family life? And how would I be able to juggle all those responsibilities as a single parent at the time? I've even cried over some of them. So I don't want to discount that because there is some truth in it. Meaning, you know, if I were one of those people that could have been in the office 100% of the time my whole career, I probably would have been in a different place. But I'm really happy and I'm really settled with where I'm at now. And I had to remind myself all along the way that this is my definition of success. I do not need to judge my definition of success against the definition of someone else's. So if I was able to juggle all those things, provide a roof over our heads, and still have a meaningful career that I feel good about, and have time and energy for those two children that I love more than anything. And now actually I have five because we're in a blended family. And so, you know, I call it a win. So for employers that are hesitant to consider bringing in more remote workers or even flexibility, right? Because I'm talking about things like alternate work schedules, compressed work schedules, 4-day work weeks, you know, wow, all of those things that are like against the traditional kind of work. First and foremost, it's a different landscape now. And, you know, employers are competing worldwide with top tier talent every single day. Think about the talent that's considering, again, I alluded to the Texodus, moving and relocating to lower cost of living areas. They're willing to give up their six-figure jobs to create an easier lifestyle for themselves and their families. Many people are doing it. And so right now I think is a great time for workers like us because we do have a lot more choice and we're able to navigate the workplace a little bit differently. I think you'll start seeing more of a focus on, again, just really crowdsourcing information about the workplace culture and making those decisions ahead of time because I, for one, couldn't go into, let's say, a traditional workplace and profess to be able to be there 40 hours a week on site plus a commute. It wouldn't work for my life. So if I were competing for a position like that, I'd have to know what I was giving up in order to do that. On the flip side, employers need to understand what they're giving up by either not offering these options and making sure that it's equitable when they're selecting people for high level visible projects or working with clients, you know, that are going to lead to pathways of promotion and other things, advancement in the company. So, you know, when you are arbitrarily making decisions that out of sight means out of mind in your workplace, you're discounting a huge piece of either the future workplace or the current workplace that needs some form of flexibility. So I'd like to say, you know, like I said, there's some truth to it, but when you're considering it from a workplace or a worker perspective, rather, there's a lot of information out there. Again, we publish the top 100 most remote-friendly employers each and every year. That's a great place to start. The Forbes best, I think there's 500 best American workplaces every single year. Another great place to start. And then those who are hiring veterans, because typically those companies that are publicly professing their commitment to hiring military spouses and veterans and military caregivers are the ones that also get it. They offer a lot of flexibility because they're dedicated to their diversity rather than inclusion in the workplace.
I love that. I really appreciate the whole picture that you're talking about. It's not just salary. It's not just title. It's, you know, it is the whole of your life and your fulfillment and happiness. And I really love how you bookmarked that thought of defining one's own success. And I find even a few seconds on LinkedIn can sometimes throw me off, and you see someone announcing a new job, and you're like, oh, I want that. And then you kind of have to take a step back, or I have to take a step back and realize, like, hey, what is the success that I'm going for? And what is the life I want to create for my family? And that might be completely different than anyone else on the planet. But like you said, all that matters is that's my definition and that's what I want to pursue. And I appreciate you saying that, because I know personally how hard it can be to define that and then relentlessly pursue that. And when I look at your career story, it seems like you've managed to do that. And I don't imagine it's easy, but you've defined that success and you've continued to pursue it and turn down all of these exceptional jobs. That takes a lot of courage and that takes a lot of self-knowledge. And I just really appreciate that.
Thank you. It's nothing easy though. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of self-reminders too. So, just recalibrating. And again, you know, your life ebbs and flows. So your work life priorities and needs will ebb and flow. And being able to understand, okay, now maybe making money is the primary objective right now for this moment. Maybe more time is for another in your life. So it really just depends. And the great news is there's so many options now. Yeah. There's so many options for workers right now.
So I'm in one of those rare positions where I know there you have so much knowledge and I don't know the best questions to ask. And normally I just give 2 or 3 minutes at the end to make it more open-ended, but I'd love to give you a wider berth. And you know, we've got this audience of veterans and military spouses and people on active duty. What else do you want them to know? What else do you want to share with them?
Well, again, I just want to reiterate how much support there is out there. I think often we don't do a great job. We, meaning the community, doesn't do such a great job of communicating all of the great things and also curating them in a way that makes it easy. You know, I spent almost 2 decades spend more than 2 decades in public service. So I know it's incredibly hard as the nation's largest employer to be able to distill that information and make it available, but it's out there. There is a lot of support throughout one's transition for military spouses along the way of one's career and also throughout transition that are available both at the federal level, but also in community support resources too. And I know that this community knows better than anyone to lean on each other because we're all in it together. So I just encourage continuing to do just that. There's also so many incredible benefits that are available to us that, we might not have considered. I just mentioned that my daughter now is 17. So I'm looking at ways to help her through her college search process. I do not have GI Bill benefits anymore because I use them for my graduate degree. So unfortunately, she won't get access to some of those yellow ribbon integration schools that typically would be extended to dependents. But there are a lot of statewide resources for veterans if I wanted to go back to school, but also maybe some dependents as well. And I know that there are an incredible wealth of information, resources, and especially in the employment sector, available for veterans and military families. So I just encourage you to keep searching and looking and sharing information and passing it along also to help others, number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, don't be afraid to ask for what you need. You know, it's hard, I feel like, sometimes because we veterans have been taught to mission first, right? At all expense, mission first. But you can't mission first if you don't take care of yourself first. So again, back to kind of understanding what work situation would suit you best and what you actually want, getting really clear about that, whether it's a higher salary, whether it's a location, whether it's an industry, whether it's flexibility, which of those things are the highest priority for you? And where are you going to start your search first and foremost? And then just recalibrating that along the way, I think is incredibly important. And, you know, we talked a lot about mentors. We cannot discount the power of peer mentors also. They do not always have to be in a position, you know, that you look up to. You can also look to the left and the right flank and find them there too.
I think that's wonderful. And that second point you had is so essential, that sense of taking care of oneself. And I think it is a trend that I see in our military community and veteran community is putting others first, which is a beautiful thing. And, you know, at some point that takes a cost. And if there's one thing I wish for our audience, it's like really advocating for themselves and doing what's best for them and their family. And, you know, not catering to recruiters or anyone else, just like really doing what's best for them. Since we have a few more minutes, could you share with listeners a little bit about the place where you work, FlexJobs?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So FlexJobs is my first big private industry role. I took a leap of faith after 20 years of public service. And honestly, I really felt good about coming to this company because we sort of consider it as a social enterprise. This business was founded about 13 years ago by our founder, Sarah Sutton. She happened to be 7 months pregnant and had lost her position, we think because she needed maternity leave. So she really wanted to create a model that would enable job seekers to really be able to sort through all of the noise around flexible work and be able to rely on a service that researches, screens, vets, and verifies the best remote and flexible employers and their jobs. So we have a huge team of researchers that do just that. In fact, 80% of the employers who request to post jobs on FlexJobs do not get approved to do so. We have a 100% money back guarantee. We have great discounts for veterans and military families and spouses. So I'd be happy to share that as well, because she really wanted to make it accessible, especially to this community, which also felt really like family when I came to join the company. But what's great about FlexJobs is that you're able to come and really have confidence that you're accessing amazing opportunities and all sorts of kinds of flexible jobs. So we have more than 50 different career categories. You heard that right, more than 50. So this isn't just retail and customer service and, you know, online reservations. There's some of that, of course, but there's healthcare, economics, HR, marketing. There's also gig work and contract work. There's work that you could work on a part-time basis, seasonal basis, all of the above. Anything that's outside of your traditional 9-to-5, typical in-office kind of position, you will find on FlexJobs. And we guarantee that you're going to be free from scams. Because the unfortunate thing is that when you do go on other job boards or job searching services, there's no way to really discriminate against whether or not this is a legitimate job opportunity that offers real flexible and remote options, or whether it could be a scam. And there are a lot of scams, unfortunately, because so many people want to find a work from home or flexible role.
Well, thank you, Mika. I appreciate your time today. I appreciate your sharing your story with Beyond the Uniform. And I appreciate, you know, just like that lady, I'm blanking on her name, Shireen, who had helped you.
Shireen, yes.
Who had paid, you know, shared her advice with you and helped you. I just know from our conversation how you're just that personality too that's constantly giving and impacting those around you. So I just appreciate the role model you are for so many of our listeners and just the way that you're generously giving back to a community that supported you as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And likewise, thank you for bringing these amazing podcasts and the great messages that you're looking to curate. I'm really excited to be a part of it, and I can't wait to tune into more of them.
Beyond the Uniform is written and produced by me, Justin Nasiri, with help from our Chief of Staff, Steve Bain, and our editor, Kathleen Dillon. We are an all-volunteer organization and would greatly appreciate your help in any of the following ways. First, spread the word. Beyond the Uniform has over 330 podcast episodes and 15 on-demand webinars, all offered for free. Help us spread the word on social media, at military bases, or whatever gets this resource in front of more men and women who need it. Positive reviews on iTunes go a long way towards this as well. Second, sponsorship. Beyond the Uniform relies on sponsorship to keep us going. There is so much more we'd like to do, but we don't have nearly the resources to do so. If you know of a company that would like to advertise in any way with Beyond the Uniform, please send them to beyondtheuniform.org. Third, donations. If you're in a financial position to donate, you can find more information on the support section of beyondtheuniform.org. At our website, beyondtheuniform.org, you'll also find 330-plus episodes categorized by industry, functional role, and more. You'll find a link for live events, typically 4 per month. You'll also find both free and for-purchase books that take a deeper dive on topics related to career growth. Thank you for your support as we aim to help members of the military and their families thrive in their post-military career and life.